Chapter 12. Holden. The Transport Union controller's offices were buried three levels deep in the thick walls of Medina Station's rotating drum. It made the Coriolis slightly less noticeable than inside the drum, but also meant that they were inside gray metal cubes with desks in them and no screens to even give the illusion of a window. Holden couldn't say for sure why it felt more depressing than sitting in the metal cubes of a spaceship compartment, but it was. Naomi sat beside him, watching the news feeds on her hand terminal, unaffected by the grim locale. The Rocinante was doing a mandatory security contract, the first gig since they'd left. Maybe that was what he was reacting to. Form 4011D transfers your retainer and future contracts to Roberta W. Draper and states that she is now the legal captain of the Rocinante and president of RociCorp, a series registered corporate entity. The transport union representative, who was processing their paperwork, handed Holden an oversized terminal covered in legalese. She had a pinched face, deep frown lines on her forehead and around her mouth, and wore her hair in short spikes dyed flaming red. Holden thought she looked like a disgruntled pufferfish, but recognized his unflattering opinion was at least partly a reaction to the mountain of forms she'd made him fill out. "You do know," the pufferfish said, "that this is a temporary change of status pending the legal change of ownership registration? Our next stop is the bank, where we'll be finalizing the loan to sell the ship." "Mm-hmm," Puffer said, making it a sound of deep skepticism. As Holden filled out the next of the endless forms, he listened to the small voices coming from Naomi's terminal. He only caught about every third word, but the hot topic of conversation was definitely the approaching Laconian ships. "Luna," Naomi said. "Something happening on Luna?" "No, I mean, let's try Luna first. It'll be easy to find consulting gigs, what with all the work going on down on Earth." "I'm not sure I..." Holden started. "Not you, me. I could get consulting gigs. I like the gravity there. And you could pop down the well whenever you wanted to visit your parents." "True." His parents were all pushing the centenarian mark, and while he'd been lucky and they were all in pretty good shape, he didn't want them doing orbital launches to visit him if they could avoid it. "And it's all very far from this," she said, pointing at her screen. "Not a bad thing," he agreed, and handed his filled-out screen back to the puffer. "But I did like the idea of living in exuberant decadence on Titan. When we have enough money to do that for another 3 decades. 2 hours, Naomi said, and Holden didn't need to ask what she was referring to. 2 hours until the first representatives from Laconia to come through their gate in decades would arrive. "We done here?" The puffer agreed that they were. "I could use a drink," Holden said. "Let's go get a drink and watch the big arrival on the screens in a bar or something." They did. It didn't go well. Holden ran across the open fields of the rotating drum, leading toward the lift up to Medina's command center. The adrenaline pumping through his veins only seemed to make his heart beat faster without speeding him up. It occurred to him, with a sort of surreal detachment, that this was exactly like the many nightmares he'd had. He reached the lift station, pressed the call button, and willed the doors to open. Bobby was yelling, "Fire, fire, fire," on the Rosie's group channel, her voice coming out of his terminal loud but not panicky. Commanding. On the screen, Alex was sending him the Rosie's tactical display. Three of the railguns on the hub station fired at the massive Laconian ship. The shots all hit, tearing holes in the hull, but the breaches closed almost as fast as they were created. It didn't look like damage control systems. It looked like it was healing. Holden had seen that sort of nearly instantaneous repair before, but not on human technologies. It took a really bad situation and made it a nightmare. "Bobby," he yelled back at the terminal, "keep the ship." He didn't get to finish, because the screen flashed white and died. Medina actually shuddered. The entire station shook and rang like a bell. "Jim," Naomi said, and then couldn't finish because she was still gasping for breath from her run. She made the belter hand signal for emergency. "Should we be looking for a shelter?" It was a valid question. If the Laconians started poking holes in Medina, they'd want to be in a sealed emergency compartment with its own air supply. "Go find one," he said, "but I need to get up to command." "Why?" Another valid question. "Because I've fought in 3 major wars," he thought. "Because the belters running the station are the ones that didn't join Marco's Free Navy, so they've never been in this kind of fight. They'll need my experience." All perfectly true and probably valid reasons. But he didn't say them out loud because he knew Naomi would see through them instantly to the truth. "Because something terrible is happening, and I don't know how not to be in the middle of it." The doors finally opened, and the car recognized him as a captain with union clearances and gave him access to the overrides. As they went up, the feeling of gravity slowly turned into a lurching sideways motion and then disappeared. The lift opened into the corridors that Holden remembered fighting through under heavy fire, back when humans first found their way into the ring system. That astonishing moment in human history, passing through a stable wormhole into an alien-created network of interstellar gates, had just led to a whole bunch of people deciding to shoot each other. And now, a group of people who'd been isolated from humanity for decades were rejoining society just as things seemed to be going pretty well. And what did they do? Start shooting. Holden's terminal gave a gentle ping and then reconnected to the network. A moment later, Alex's face appeared.
"You still there, Cap?"
"Yeah, just outside Medina Ops. Did that thing hit the station? Not seeing any atmo loss alerts here."
"It shot the—" Alex started, then said, "It's easier to show you. Take a look at this shit. Just a minute."
Holden slapped the wall panel and the door slid open. He pulled himself inside the ops center. The duty officer put up a hand.
"You can't come in here, sir. I mean, Captain Holden, sir."
"Who's in charge right now?"
"Me?"
Holden had met her once before at a transport union function. Daphne Cole, a competent technician, somebody who'd done an engineering tour on Tycho. Perfect for non-combat ops duty on a station like Medina. Absolutely out of her depth now.
"Holden?" Alex said. "You still there?"
Holden turned his hand terminal so the duty officer could see it too.
"Go ahead, Alex."
On his hand terminal screen, the massive Laconian ship was floating past the ring gate. It had a thick lozenge shape, not quite circular in cross-section, and with a variety of asymmetrical projections jutting out from the sides. More organic than constructed. It came to a gentle stop just inside the ring gate. The Tory Byron, the transport union's cruiser tasked with defending Medina Station, moved toward it. Holden couldn't see or hear them, but he imagined the stream of hails and demands the Byron was throwing at the Laconian ship. Then, happening so fast it was like a glitch in the graphic, the Byron turned into a rapidly expanding cloud of superheated gas and metal fragments. In the playback, Bobby was yelling, "Fire, fire, fire," and the rail guns on the hub station opened up. The image jittered, and the rail guns were ripped away from the hub and sent spinning off, fracturing into a cloud of ceramic shrapnel as they went.
"That's what you felt," Alex said. The second time they fired that weapon, every ship in the zone shook, and half the electronics blew out.
What? Holden said. The fuck was that?
Alex didn't answer. His expression was as eloquent as a shrug.
Okay, I assume Bobby's got you guys hiding in the station's radar shadow still, since I'm talking to you and you're not dead.
Yeah, Alex said. She seems pretty strongly in favor of not doing anything to make it mad.
Let me see what I can find out here and I'll call back.
Copy that, Alex said. Rosie out.
It's magnetic? Naomi said, her tone managing to be authoritative and astounded at the same time. This is what it is, but I don't believe what I'm seeing. She'd floated across the ops center to one of the consoles and was working with the tech there. It's reading as an incredibly strong magnetic field focused down to a narrow beam. Is that possible? The duty officer said, her voice small and tight.
Only if you define possible as things that have already happened, Naomi said, not turning to look at her.
So, anything made of metal is vulnerable, another tech said.
It isn't just metal, Holden replied, then pushed off to drift over to Naomi's station and look at the data she was pulling up.
Everything has a magnetic field, Naomi added. Usually it's too weak to matter, but at the levels that beam is hitting, it could spaghettify hydrogen atoms. Anything it touches will be ripped apart.
There's no way to defend against something like that, Holden said, then went limp. In microgravity, it was not as satisfying as collapsing into a chair would have been.
That's what shook Medina, Naomi said. Just the beam passing near us. The maneuvering thrusters had to fire to hold us still.
Holden, this is Draper, his terminal said. Holden here. Looks like that big bastard is ignoring us as long as we stay really still and keep the weapons unpowered.
That's a good sign, Holden said. It might mean they're not looking to kill everyone, just making a point of destroying anything that's a threat.
Point loudly and clearly made, Bobby agreed. But be aware, there's a second ship, smaller, and is heading for Medina.
Tactical assessment?
Based on how thoroughly they took out our defenses, Bobby said, I'd bet they do a hard breach, storm ops in the reactor room, and grab full control of the station. If their ground troops have tech like that ship does, it shouldn't take long.
Copy that. I'm going to try to minimize casualties down here. Wait for me to make contact. Holden out.
Hard breach? Naomi asked, though her tone said she already knew the answer.
They'll drop fire teams all over the station to take over access points, control centers, power and environmental support, Holden replied, more to the room at large than to Naomi.
He turned to Daphne Cole.
I think you should have everyone here start making calls. Get every union and planetary rep in secure locations, but tell their security details to stand down. No visible weapons. Tell them we're not attempting to repel borders. That'll just get people killed and maybe piss off that monster of a ship.
Yes, sir, she said. Are you taking command?
No, I'm not, but this is the right thing to do, and we need to do it now, so we should do it. Please.
Her expression fell a degree. She'd hoped someone in authority had arrived. Someone who knew what to do. He recognized the hope and the disappointment both.
We're not going to fight back at all? Cole asked.
He gestured toward the screens. The dust that was Tory Byron and the railgun emplacements. Cole looked away. Still, he couldn't bring himself to say no.
Not yet, Holden said.
Naomi was already collecting sidearms from the other techs in the ops center and putting them in a duffel bag. Not yet.
The second ship looked to be about destroyer-sized to Holden's eye. It did a slow flyover of Medina Station, taking out the torpedo racks and PDC emplacements with pinpoint accurate railgun shots, then dropping a dozen Marine landing craft. As it came, Cole did as he suggested, passing the word throughout the ship not to resist. Live to fight another day. After the last call, she seemed to sway for a moment, then turned, spat on the deck, and pulled up something that looked like a security interface.
What are you doing?
Purging the security system, she said. No census, no biometric records, no deck plans, no records. We can't stop the fuckers, but we don't need to make it easy for them.
Fou bien, Naomi said, approving.
Holden wondered whether the forces coming in would be able to track the decision back to her. He hoped they wouldn't. Each landing craft held a fire team of 8 Marines, all wearing power armor of an unusual design, like Bobby's, but with different articulation at the joints, and all in a vibrant blue that made them seem like something that had hauled itself up from the sea. The Marines were methodical and professional. Where the doors opened for them, they entered without causing damage. Where they found locked doors, they breached with ruthless efficiency, blowing the door seals and hauling the plates back in a single, well-trained motion. When they passed unarmed civilians, they moved on by with nothing more than a warning not to resist. The few times they ran into someone with a hero complex who tried to fight back, they killed whoever presented a threat, but no one else. That it wasn't a straight-out massacre was the only comfort. Watching it all happen from his position in the op center, Holden found that he had to admire the level of training and discipline the Laconians displayed. They left no doubt that they were absolutely in charge, and they responded to any aggression with immediate lethal force. But they didn't abuse the civilians. They didn't push anyone around. They showed nothing that looked like bravado or bullying. Even the violence didn't have any anger behind it. They were like animal handlers. Holden, Naomi, and the rest of the Ops Center techs did what they could to keep the station populace from panicking or foolishly resisting, but it was almost irrelevant. Nothing kept the people calmer than the calm their invaders demonstrated. When the door to the op center opened and one of the fire teams entered, Holden told everyone in the room to raise their hands and surrender. A tall, dark-skinned woman in armor with insignia that looked like a modified Martian colonel rank walked toward him on magnetic boots. "I am Colonel Tanaka," she said, her voice booming with electronically augmented volume. "Medina Station is under our control. Please indicate that you understand and are complying." Holden nodded and gave her his best fake smile.
"I understand. And as long as you continue not to abuse the people here, we will not violently resist."
It was a deliberate provocation. If Tanaka were there to flex her muscles and show how important and in charge she was, she'd point out that her people could abuse the populace to their heart's content, and there wasn't a damn thing he could do about it. Instead, she said,
"Understood. Prepare a hard dock at the reactor level of the station for our ship."
When the dockmaster indicated that it was ready, Tanaka touched a control on her wrist and said,
"Captain Singh, a berth is being prepped for docking. The station is ours."
"I am Captain Santiago Singh of the Laconian destroyer Gathering Storm," the young man said. "I'm here to accept your surrender."
His uniform was trim and spotless. The design looked Martian, except for the blue-gray color scheme where Holden was used to red and black. Cole floated before him, confusion in her eyes.
"This is an act of war," she said, her voice trembling.
Holden felt an urge to step in, refocus the man onto him, just to make her safer. It was a stupid impulse.
"The Union, the Earth-Mars Coalition, the Association of Worlds, they won't stand for this.
I know, the young man said. This is going to be all right. But I have to accept your surrender now, please. She braced to attention, and it was over. It had taken less than 4 hours from the first transit. Marines in Laconian power armor patrolled the corridors and command points of the station. Naval personnel in sharply designed uniforms hurried about hooking equipment into various communication and environmental systems with a well-practiced efficiency. The people of Medina mostly watched in a sort of dazed shock. It had all happened so quickly, it was impossible to process. He and Naomi were swept up along with the hundreds of representatives from the colonized worlds, several dozen reps from the transport union, the senior staff of Medina Station. He didn't have any actual authority. He wasn't even technically the captain of a ship or a member of the transport union anymore, but no one argued. They all gathered in the Coalition Council Room, an amphitheater with 2,000 seats and a stage with a podium on it that consciously aped the layout of the General Assembly of the UN back on Earth. Admiral Trejo was a stocky, older man, with the relaxed air of a person who'd spent so long holding a military posture that he looks comfortable in it. He took his place at the podium, flanked by a pair of Marines. Captain Singh and Colonel Tanaka stood respectfully behind him and off to one side. "Greetings," the Admiral said, smiling out at them. "I am High Admiral Anton Trejo of the Laconian Empire and personal representative of High Consul Winston Duarte, our leader. And now, your leader as well." He paused as though waiting for applause. After a moment, he continued. "As you know, we have accepted control of Medina Station. And yes, we intend to take control of all the 1,300 worlds it leads to. This isn't an act of aggression, but necessity. We bear no ill will or animosity toward any of you. As you've seen, this will be as bloodless a transition as you allow it to be. I'm bringing you here to implore you to please contact your homeworlds. We will make communications available for anyone who will tell them peacefully to relinquish control to us. If they do this, there will be no need for violence of any kind." "I admit, I kind of like these guys," Holden whispered to Naomi. "I mean, as conquistadors go." "There'll be a but," she said. "There's always a but." "Cooperation is the coin of the Empire," Trejo continued. "The beginnings were already in motion here. Your association of worlds, the transport union, all of these things will continue. High Consul Duarte wants input and representation from all the systems humanity has colonized and will colonize. The Transport Union is a vital apparatus in supporting those efforts. Both organizations can and must continue their important work. The only thing that has changed is that High Consul Duarte will be expediting the process. The Laconian fleet will be the defenders of a new galactic civilization of which you will all be welcome citizens. The only price is cooperation with the new order, and a tax to be paid to the Empire that will not be onerous and will be entirely invested back into the creation of new infrastructure and aid to fledgling or struggling planetary economies. The golden age of man will begin under the High Consul's leadership." Trejo paused again, his smile slipping. He looked pained and saddened by what he was about to say. "Here it comes," Naomi whispered. "But to those who intend to defy this new government and try to deny humanity its bright future, I say this. You will be eradicated without hesitation or mercy. The military might of Laconia has only one function,
and that is the defense and protection of the Empire and its citizens. Loyal citizens of the Empire will know only peace and prosperity, and the absolute certainty of their own safety under our watchful eye. Disloyalty has one outcome. Death.
Ah, Naomi said, though it was more a long exhalation than a word.
The nicest totalitarian government ever, I'm sure.
By the time we figure out all the ways it isn't, Holden said, it will be too late to do anything about it.
Will be? Naomi asked. Or is?